Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, November 4th. This means that it is election day across the country. But first, some news that just came in a couple of hours ago. Former Vice President Dick Cheney has died at age 84 from heart complications. He served, of course, under President George W. Bush and held key roles, including Secretary of Defense, now Secretary of War, during the 1991 Gulf War. And he died yesterday on November 3rd at his home in Wyoming. According to reports surrounded by family, the cause was complications from pneumonia and longstanding cardiac and vascular diseases, which he had managed since his 30s through multiple procedures. So there have been tributes from conservatives highlighting his national security contributions, while critics, this coming from Grok on X, point to his influence on the Iraq War and the post 9/11 policies. And in later years, Cheney, of course, along with his daughter, opposed Donald Trump, and he actually endorsed Kamala Harris in 2024. So, in my opinion, as a conservative, did not finish well, but we do send condolences to his family for that loss. So, turning to Election Day across the country. So, the big races that everyone is looking at, of course, is the New Jersey gubernatorial election and the New York City mayoral race. So first, the gubernatorial election in New Jersey is a big deal because currently the polls are showing the Republican nominee really within the margin of error with the Democrat nominee, which is surprising only because New Jersey has not voted for a Republican since I think the last election. They've consistently voted for Democrats since around 1992. So it's been a really long time. And they have basically the polar opposite of Florida with over 1 million more registered Democrats in the state. So they're considered a blue state by comparison to Florida, which has over 1 million more Republican voters. So to have that kind of upset in New Jersey today would be huge for the GOP, especially in an off year where typically if the party that has the trifecta or even just the White House and the majority, typically then the balance of power in some of these elections swings to the other party. So this may be more of a shift in understanding what's going on nationally, which of course brings us to the New York City mayoral race. And this may be the first time in U.S. history that a mayor of the largest city in America is a self-proclaimed Democrat, socialist, and a Muslim. This is a worldview issue in the United States, and the polling on this is very interesting, not just because what everybody's pointing to in the media is how Curtis Sliwa, who is the Republican, should have dropped out and told his voters to go for Cuomo because the aggregate would likely make that at least within a couple of points. And Cuomo, while he's running as an independent, is certainly not a Republican, not a conservative, but overall better. And in fact, Donald Trump came out on Truth Social last night encouraging Republicans to vote for Cuomo as basically the lesser of two evils. So that's been kind of the focus in the media. But what I found fascinating was a Patriot polling survey that discussed the difference between foreign-born voters. So these are hopefully at least people who still qualify or U.S. citizens, of course, right? But foreign-born voters, Mamdani had a 62% lead, while Cuomo was at only 24%, and Curtis Sliwa at 12%. So Mamdani at 62% among foreign-born voters, while U.S.-born voters had Cuomo at 40%, Mamdani at 31%, sometimes reported as 32, so about a 9 to 10% boost for Cuomo, and then Sliwa at 25%. So that comes from Patriot Poll's crosstabs, and this is, I think, the crisis of America right now in a snapshot. Because while we are looking at the differences in worldview, we're wondering how a self-proclaimed democratic socialist can be so popular among young people. Of course, you know, 35 years of age and below are thinking that maybe socialism is going to work. They're used to a welfare state and want handouts, think the American dream is beyond their reach, you know, all of those things. And so we're considering the socialist mentality, which is basically a forced equality that's not really equal, but handouts and communism, which has failed every time it's been tried. But what is really fascinating about this, I think, is that when you see the difference between foreign-born voters versus U.S.-born, we're still talking about a difference between people who have grown up largely in a country that has promoted capitalism, has been largely Christian, and has had a complete difference in terms of the overall worldview that's been provided to them just through the culture than so many of these foreign-born immigrants, whether they come here legally or illegally. They're coming here and failing to assimilate to our U.S. constitutional structure of government and the philosophy behind it. And that becomes really dangerous in the decades later that you're seeing now the contrast between Mamdani's policies and his likability and his favorabilities among those foreign-born voters that haven't assimilated to American culture and the U.S.-born voters that still at least largely understand that while we may be in a pluralistic society, we still have a measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil, that is premised on a biblical Judeo-Christian worldview. And Charlie Kirk warned about this and about Islamism attacking Christians and the worldview contrast before he died. Listen to this clip as he was speaking to a live audience here. This is cut one.
The spiritual battle is coming to the West. And the enemies are wokeism or Marxism combining with Islamism to go after what we call the American way of life. And the American way of life is very simple. I want to be able to get married, buy a home, have kids, allow them to ride their bike till the sun goes down, send them to a good school, have a low crime neighborhood, not to have my kid be taught the lesbian, gay, transgender garbage in their school. While also not having them have to hear the Muslim call to prayer five times a day. That's important. We want the American way of life, which is, by the way, Christendom. Christians, our sacrifice, our toil, our vision, the outgrowth of the scriptures gave us Western civilization. And this is where I think is a great rallying cry. Doesn't matter if you're Hispanic, doesn't matter if you're Asian, doesn't matter if you're black or white. Everybody, if you are Christian and Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior, these two threats are combining forces to come after us. And it's time that the church stands and rises up against it.
Yep.
Absolutely. And Charlie Kirk could not have been more precision in that clip, because what makes us American is the Judeo-Christian biblical worldview of government, of family, and of the church and of our nation. What makes us American is not necessarily that we are foreign-born versus U.S.-born. It's about understanding the American mentality, which is absolutely the Judeo-Christian worldview. And it reminds me of what my pastor was talking about this past Sunday in Acts 2, when he was talking about the early church. And when the day of Pentecost came, when they were all together in one place, and how different the fellowship of believers was and how their backgrounds, their past, their race, their age, their gender, I mean, none of that mattered. All of these people were together under a common cause, which is the cause of Christ, because they believed in the truth of the gospel of Christ. So if you go to Acts 2, verse 42, it says this: they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad hearts and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Now, a lot of people misunderstandingly and I think wrongly interpret this as the early church was actually communist. And in fact, some Christians would point to this and say, well, look, you know, democratic socialism is actually the way that the early church went. But that's not at all what this passage is talking about. It's talking about the fellowship of believers. The Greek term for this is the koinonia, which is not to be confused with the ecclesia. The ecclesia is the government structure of the church. It's talking about the fellowship among believers, among the central premise that they were believers in Christ. And because they devoted themselves to teaching, to fellowship, to the breaking of bread, and to prayer. And this is an instruction for us in these times that are very, very concerning, and that we may end up having national ramifications because of the New York City election. If Mamdani doesn't win today, it's going to be an upset. He's the clear favorite, and I think this is largely because of the foreign-born voters that have not assimilated into American society. And it's because I think largely the church has abandoned our obligation to help those who are here in our communities understand why we are distinctly a Christian nation that is founded on biblical truths in our organization and structure of government. Just like we have the ecclesia, the structure of government in the church, we have the structure of the family government with a husband and a wife. We have one man and one woman united in marriage, and that is the context for raising children, not only to be good members of society, but in the fear and admonition of the Lord. We also, as a church, must express the role and the structure of government, not that it's biblically commanded to be a constitutional republic, but that it is biblically commanded and it is professed that our rights come from God, our creator, and it is the sole duty and responsibility of government to preserve and protect those rights for the individual and for the family. That is the key distinction. We can argue about policy, and I think a lot of this campaigning and a lot of what the Republican Party right now is doing is focused too much on policy instead of the biblical worldview and the understanding of the structure of government that has gotten so far away from the biblical founding. We have to, as a church, devote ourselves to teaching, to understanding good doctrine. We cannot forsake the fellowship together so that we are learning from each other. We have discipleship, the breaking of bread, together, where fellowship happens is usually around the dinner table and when people come over, hospitality and community, small groups in your church, and also to prayer. We have to be more and more praying for the future of this nation, and that we would not be given over to these foreign influences, whether it is religion or government worldview, whether it's Islam or whether it's Sharia law, whether it's anything that is, whether it's communism, anything that is seeking to destroy the structure of government that would not recognize the obligation of government to preserve and protect the right of the individual. We have to be more bold as a church to explain the structure of government that comes from God's authority himself, so that we don't get in situations like this, where we have, again, all of these voters that are the young people thinking communism might work, or all of these foreign-born voters who don't understand what America is actually all about. So let's pray for this nation today. And even though we may lose this election in New York City, that is one battle we have not at all lost the war for the West. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, and we are still talking about Election Day and how the New York City mayoral race will have drastic impacts on the rest of the country if Mamdani is elected as the first Democrat socialist Islamic Muslim mayor. And so let's welcome in Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins from the great state of Florida. And Mr. Lieutenant Governor, you know, this is such a contrast in worldview, and that goes, you know, down from the base worldview of how you view the system of government, to then policy, to then the difference between, you know, capitalism versus communism. And there is such a contrast between what's happening in New York right now versus Florida. And I think there is rightfully some concern that this election would have ramifications on the rest of the country. So how do you see this?
Well, Jenna, you did a great job laying it all out there. The fact is this: in all cities across these United States, why on earth does New York have to learn this horrific, this horrible, this lesson the hardest way humanly possible? Socialism just leads to communism. We know that is their goal. It has always worked out the same. We don't have to try it out. We know who Mamdani is. We know exactly who he is. He does not believe in America. He does not love America. Why on earth are we going to let this guy lead this city that never sleeps? Its effect on the economy of this nation, on the breakdown of security in that community, let alone that state, is going to have a compoundingly negative effect on many areas. But what we have to worry about here in Florida is, where are the people going to go that flee New York? We know many of them are going to come here. And overarchingly, I want to make it very clear, if you're going to come here to the free state of Florida, leave your New York politics exactly where they are right now. Don't bring that crap here. We don't want to see it. It doesn't belong here. We believe in freedom. We're not going to go socialist. We're not here for communism. We are here for American principles, freedom, liberty, an economy that actually grows with the people, not one that takes away all of their freedoms and promises them the same meager results that socialism always does. Leave that stuff in New York.
Yeah, so well said. And I think what we would be seeing on, you know, kind of a smaller level is exactly the problem of what's happening in America with importing the culture and the political views from other countries that are failing to assimilate to America. And we in the state of Florida, I say we because I am a Floridian that brought my conservative views here because of Governor DeSantis, because of Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, who was in the Senate for years and did such a great job there, and because of all of the policies of Florida that are trying to promote more conservatism and more biblical values, more things that actually help preserve and protect my rights, instead of bringing, you know, policies from my former home state of Colorado that's totally off the rails. And so this has to be the same thing, that we require assimilation to conservatism. How does that actually work when you see that, you know, some people obviously are going to have that that disconnect and that cognitive dissonance between leaving what they don't want, but then still bringing their policies here?
Yeah. So, you know, ultimately, I'm going to put this back on our party, back on our conservative leaders. You know, our founding fathers understood something so many years ago. And so we all have to take an active part. We all have to do our part in preserving the republic. Franklin said that very eloquently, as did many of our leaders then. We got to remember, these were young men, for the most part, that stepped up and led and built a principled nation based on Judeo-Christian values. This is our roots. This is where we came from, and we have to protect that. But we got to use our voices. We've got to be out there and show them why this works, how this works. That comes from the governor, the lieutenant governor, our Senate, and our House. And we need to be aligned on these issues, because the looming problem, it's not squabbling between different parts of the legislature or the governor or back and forth. It's not. It is having one mission and remembering that we serve the people of Florida. We are fighting for freedom and liberty, and we have to be on the same page and push forward no matter what, because the left is not out to solve real problems. The left, especially those in New York, New Jersey, California, want to graphically and completely change how our nation works. We better keep our eyes on the horizon, protect our people from the coming threat that's out there. And my fear is that we're going to get drawn into squabble between the House and the Senate, squabble between the House and the governor. And I'm here to tell you, the people of Florida deserve better. We can't do that nonsense. We need to focus on the upcoming problem that's coming our way and be resolute in who we are and what we stand for.
Yeah, and I want to get into that property tax debate here in Florida because, you know, we're actually debating things that matter and things that are making our way of life better instead of, you know, trying to rid ourselves of communism. So thankfully, we have some things that are really good policy, and we're continuing to increase the blessings of living in this state. But before we get to that topic, just really quickly on the assimilation factor, you are a devout Christian and understand the founders' view from a biblical lens, as does Governor DeSantis, and you both speak so prolifically on this. And so you've spoken about the role of the state, but what about the role of the church and helping people understand the American way of life?
Well, Jenna, that's a great point to make right here. The time is now for people to use their voice. Our Christian values lead us to use our voice and preach and push and be essentially disciples for what we believe, to use our voice and be bold and be strong, not to sit back and be timid and afraid of what the cancel culture or the mob out there is going to say and do. We've got to be bold and strong. And ultimately, look, I believe in my core in what our founding fathers created. I believe that God's plan is so much greater than ours. And I know for a fact that we are in this moment not to sit back and allow our state to fall back, to allow our nation to fail, but to lead and press as we roll into our 250th anniversary of our declaration, of our nation. You know, it's a republic if we can keep it, as Franklin quipped many, many, many years ago. We have to keep it. It's up to us. And those values and the church stepping into a prominent role and using their voice and understanding that you can step in and do this. And we have to stand for our values because there are places around the world that are weaponizing everything against American values. And it's time that we, the people of the United States, remember where we came from, what we stand for, but more importantly, have a voice united for where we're trying to go.
Yeah, and saving the West. I mean, this is what this is all about. And I think why Florida has to continue being that beacon of liberty and that example for the rest of the nation of, on the state level, what America is all about. And so let's get into Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, who's my special guest this morning. He's the Lieutenant Governor of the great state of Florida, my home state. There is a property tax debate that is going on in the state, a topic with some divided opinions. So supporters, including many lawmakers, are advocating for tax relief, and opponents are raising concerns that significant tax cuts would cripple local services like schools, police, fire departments, and erode local government authority. So where do you stand, and how do you and Governor DeSantis see this?
So, look, there can only be one thing that goes on the ballot. If we have 5, 6, 7, 8 of these, whatever the number is, that go forward, it's going to confuse the situation. When I speak to people across the state, and I am mobile all the time, I am doing multiple events across the state every single day, talking to people, talking to law enforcement, talking to businesses, they want relief from property tax. Hard stop. That's it. The people of Florida are citizens. The people, we need to use our ears. God gave us 2 ears and 1 mouth for a reason. They are openly telling us that they want to have property tax relief. They don't want property tax on homesteaded properties. That is what the governor has been talking about. That is where I am. That is where he is. And this can be done. But as often happens, politics comes into play because we get told it's a bridge too far. It's too hard to do this. The math is never going to work. But let's remind everybody that our property values have gone up consistently and constantly. We have an addiction to spending increases in municipal areas, right? But we also know we have an addiction to spending increase and increasing how much we're charging, right? So what do I mean by this? Our local property tax goes up and up and up. And then you see the millage rates continue to spike up in many of these municipalities. You're getting hit twice for the same thing. Never once does it go down. Not once do you see relief from this. And yet these budgets increase year over year. Where has it gone? What have we received? What did our law enforcement, our firefighters, our roads, our education receive from that growth? And it's important to remind people that the state doesn't receive a dime, not one dime, from property tax. This all goes to these municipalities. So where did it go? Our FAFO, or DOGE, as you see my good friend Blaise Ngolia pushing out there right now, is doing incredible work. And he is being incredibly diligent and going in there and rifling out, digging out all of this fraud and waste. That's billions of dollars of waste so far. More is coming.
Yeah,
there are
other
ways we can solve this.
It's been incredible to see the CFO, Blaise Ngolia, who has gone out and showed the utter waste in these local municipalities and counties compared to how Governor DeSantis has really shaped the budget on the state level of Florida and has actually eliminated it by, I think it's what, over half of the debt that Florida was in. And so this has been such a contrast between how the local governments are being run compared to the state. And so how are you encouraging voters who may be concerned about the impact on local services? How are you using this information from the CFO to say, you know, listen, there is plenty of money as long as it doesn't go to the waste that we could be giving back to the people so that we don't have as high of property taxes?
Yeah, so you hit a lot of the key points right there, Jenna. What I'm doing is simple. I'm telling them, look, have you heard of all these other potential solutions from the House? Very few have heard. Only people really focused in on this. But every single one of them have heard what the governor is trying to explain and what he's saying. Almost every single person I've spoken to is on board with this. So what do we do? One, elections have consequences. Use your voice. Go up and show your local representatives exactly what it is you want. Talk to your city council. Talk to your county commissioners. Talk to your mayor. Let them know that, look, I've seen the budget growth. I see where we're going. I want property tax relief. I'm tired of you increasing, you know, our millage count. I'm tired of my property tax going up. We can solve this. I need you to work with the governor to do that, one. Two, you know, I'm already seeing people, and I go around the state and talk to sheriffs and chiefs of police, law enforcement, multiple times a week. We're already seeing some municipalities start to flex and push and utilize the sheriff's budget as a tool to push back on property tax before it gets out there in a preemption, essentially. Guys, stop playing games. Stop the nonsense. You know and I know that you have plenty of space in your budgets to solve this problem. The people know. But more importantly, we've got to hold them accountable. I would love to see people get out there, use their voice, hold people accountable, and then ultimately when Governor DeSantis comes out with his plan, let's get behind that and collectively push. We've got to have the Senate and the House. But what I do know is this. When the people of Florida use their voice, much like we did with immigration, things change. Solutions come forward, and Florida wins. So that's the plan. We got to have people come along beside it. And when Governor DeSantis rolls out his strategy, it's time to go and get a property tax that we all want to see.
And so with this plan, when can we anticipate the rollout of that potentially? And in your view, is this going to be a ballot measure? Is this something trying to be run through the legislature? And, you know, we've seen some of the issues, of course, with the Florida legislature bizarrely opposing some of DeSantis's priorities. And so what is your vision for property tax relief in Florida, and how might this look in terms of the implementation?
Yeah, so the implementation, the governor will roll that out. I don't have a hard timeline in front of me. He'll roll it out when he's available and when it's ready. But what I do know is he's being diligent and dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and making sure that all of the second, third, and fourth order effects are thought about and taken care of. What I mean by that is this. If we already see a propensity to try to use our law enforcement or our firefighters as wedge issues, we got to block that. We got to protect our roads, protect our education, protect those who protect us, and make sure they're prioritized. And that's where the spending goes first. We got to make sure there's no shell games, no moving the cups, so to speak, to try to wait this thing out. It's tenable. So when this happens, it has to be a ballot initiative. But much like that old movie, I think from the 80s and 90s, The Highlander, there can only be one. We can only have one that goes on the ballot. Anything more than that is going to confuse the situation. People have to vote for that. 60% have to support that initiative. When that comes out and that's blessed and codified, well, then there'll be an implementation of rules and everything else that rolls that out with a timeline. I think that timeline and those rules and implementation are the key parts that DeSantis is working on right now. Once he has that out, I'm happy to get back on here and talk details, but I'm not going to get over my skis. I'm going to wait for the governor to roll out his plan and make sure that we're all on the same page. There's no misinformation. There's more enough of that as is out there. But I'll tell you this, don't bet against DeSantis. That's what I'll tell people.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone should ever bet against Governor DeSantis and his view of ensuring that there are good measures to be supported. And, you know, we saw that in the 2024 election when he got out there and really encouraged Floridians to understand amendments 3 and 4 that were on the ballot here and soundly defeated those, thankfully. So we'll look forward to that announcement and having you back on soon again. Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, you can follow him on X, and we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, as the government continues to be shut down, and the main reason for this is that the Democrats are refusing to vote for a clean continuing resolution so that they can continue to debate the ridiculous view that illegals here, people who are not citizens, should be supported by health care. They found a talking point in the cutting off and the lack of funding to SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or more commonly known as food stamps. And they're basically trying to push this back on Republicans and say, look, you are allowing a lot of people to go hungry. And so the Trump administration has now committed, according to ABC News, to partially funding the SNAP program with a $4.6 billion payment. But using the emergency funds to pay for reduced SNAP benefits could take a few weeks for up to several months, according to a top USDA official who told a federal judge that in a sworn court filing on Monday, as reported by ABC News. And so the disclosure comes after a federal judge in Rhode Island ordered the Trump administration to use emergency funds to pay for SNAP amid the ongoing government shutdown by this Wednesday, so by tomorrow. Following the court order on Friday, Trump said that it would, quote, be his honor to fund the food assistance program. So I disagree with that. I think that we are seeing in real time, especially with all of the TikTok videos and the Instagram reels, of all of these people who clearly have money for manicures, for designer bags, for hair and makeup, for cars, for a lot of other things, to then say that they need to be on government welfare and they're refusing to pay, you know, $7 or $9 for some basic essentials. And James Fishback, who is the CEO of Azoria, is has posted a really interesting statistic as well. We were talking in the first segment about how people who are foreign-born are failing to assimilate to the United States, and that's leading to the rise of what we're seeing in terms of the polling metrics with the New York City mayoral election. And he posted this on X that 25% of Haitian immigrants are on SNAP, 45% of Afghan immigrants are on SNAP, and 52% of Senegalese immigrants are on SNAP. And so DC is redistributing wealth by stealing from productive Americans to subsidize foreigners and their way of life. That is unacceptable, and America last. So James Fishback joins me now. I totally agree with you, and I hope that President Trump and the Trump administration will see through this and not give the Democrats yet another win, really, with this. How do you see this, James?
Well, good morning, Jenna. This has been the big lie that we've been told forever, that illegal immigration was bad, but we were supposed to tolerate legal immigration. Many of those Haitian immigrants, those Afghan immigrants, those Senegalese immigrants, they are quote-unquote legal. And whether they got legality through TPS, temporary protected status, through some BS fraud asylum claim, who cares? If you are in our country and you are taking jobs and taking government benefits and stealing from productive, hardworking Americans, you are illegal in my book because you are violating the covenant between America and her government, which is that we all have to pull our weight. And when you distribute the wealth from productive to the unproductive, that's a problem. And so I think President Trump's going to do the right thing here, which is to call the Democrats out. Do not let them fund Haitian, Afghan, Senegalese immigrants. It doesn't matter. You cannot come to our country and, one, refuse to assimilate, but, two, be part of this great replacement of American workers, this great theft of our resources, of our wages to fund your dereliction. It is wrong. It is un-American. And if this government shutdown forces a reckoning on it, so be it.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. And I think that this government shutdown has actually given Republicans and conservatives the opportunity to highlight in kind of a Doge fashion the waste and the redistribution of wealth in terms of government assistance. And why do you think that the administration and so many Republicans in Congress are refusing to ask that question of why can't you work?
Well, it's probably because many of the people whose support that they count on are those people. I think we have to have a really honest conversation about the root causes of this. Jenna, let's go all the way out. Let's just zoom out big time. When you've got H-1B workers coming from India and China, stealing American jobs, forcing Americans off of the payrolls to now give a foreigner a job, what does that American do? They apply for 50, 100, 150 jobs. They never hear back. Why would they hear back when a company can fire an American who's qualified, who has to deserve a market wage, and hire someone and pay them a substandard, less than market wage? Of course that American's going to have to depend on government benefits. And so I really view this government dependency problem as created by the government. When you allow companies to import foreign workers, to fire Americans, to give us unemployment, eviction, addiction, divorce, when you force us that into that state of being, no wonder so many Americans are in this desperate place. Well, I think we have to be honest. There are people on the SNAP food stamp program who are grifters, people who are out there who never want to work a day in their life, whether they're legal immigrants, illegal immigrants, or perhaps even Americans who have been here for a long time. But I'll tell you, the vast majority of people, good people who are on that program, actually do want to work, but haven't been able to because of the government, not because of the economy, not because of the private sector. It's because the government has enabled large companies like Amazon, Walmart, Meta, whatever, to say, you know what, those entry-level jobs that high school grads and college grads used to take in my state of Florida, those entry-level jobs, you know what? Americans don't get them anymore. We're going to let Indians and Chinese, we're going to let them import them through visa programs like H-1B and many others that can fill the alphabet soup. And that is a problem. So let's go all the way upstream. I was on food stamps as a kid when my dad lost his job in 08. And we used that not as a safety jacuzzi. We used it as a safety net. That's the problem, Jenna. Is the safety net has become the safety couch. It's become the safety Tempur-Pedic. It's become the safety jacuzzi. It's enabled a generation of laziness and complacency. And you know what? If you love your fellow American, you don't tell them what they want to hear. They want to hear, yes, we're going to keep supporting you. Yes, we're going to keep paying for your groceries even though you don't want to work. If you love your fellow American, you tell them the truth. And the truth is twofold. One, you got to get a job. But two, we have to revive a free market capitalism that actually gives Americans a chance in their own country. That American jobs are for Americans, not for Indians, not for Chinese. And I know, Jenna, that your viewers are a big fan of MAGA. But Jenna, we cannot make America great again with Haitians. We cannot make America great again with Indians or Chinese or Afghanis. With all due respect, we have to make America great again with Americans. And we can't do that when Americans are being replaced in their own country by foreign workers.
So well said. And I think you're absolutely right. James Fishback, my special guest this morning, you can follow him at J_Fishback on X, to look at the comprehensive problem that this isn't just isolated to SNAP benefits. It's much broader than that. And it's an overall problem with how the government is treating American workers. And when you look at the Trump administration's policies on things like bringing back manufacturing to American soil, I mean, going to support, you know, farmers, going to support the individual workers, it can't, that policy can't just be isolated as well to, you know, manufacturing in Michigan or, you know, just a couple of other isolated policies. It all has to work together. And this is why I was very frankly disappointed to hear Trump say that it would be his honor to help fund SNAP benefits without really significantly addressing the fraud and abuse that comes through these programs that are frankly just some Americans. That, and I love how you said that the jacuzzi that, you know, everybody just sits in and they don't want to get out, right? And it's instead of being a safety net that is temporary, it becomes their way of life. But then also addressing the bigger issue of how many foreigners and foreign-born workers who don't have a job are here either through H-1B visas in order to take away jobs from Americans, or they're here not working on those welfare benefits. How do you think that the Trump administration could comprehensively solve this problem, but also address it in the more immediate sense of not allowing this ridiculous talking point from the Democrats that the government shutdown is Republicans' fault?
It's a great question. There's two things here, Jenna. The first is, if we just ramp up mass deportations, there won't be the people to go use these benefits at Walmart or at Target or wherever they're using them, at the corner store. And so part of this is an immigration. It's really a multifaceted issue. So the near-term thing, we saw Tom Holman this weekend talk about hiring another 10,000 ICE agents to ramp up the deportations. But the truth of the matter is that we have to codify this into law. Congressional Republicans need to get off the podcast, need to stop going on Fox News five times a week and actually do something for once. I'm sorry, but it seems like the only person working in Washington, D.C. these days is President Trump. These congressional Republicans, I'm not a Republican. I'm a conservative. I'm an America First conservative. I'm a Christian, so I'm just going to speak truth on this. These congressional Republicans, and we can name names if we want, will not actually act. What, you know, when Elon Musk came into government, I was a big supporter of him in the early Doge program, and he sent out those five bullet points, right? What did you do this week? Jenna, can every single one of your viewers email their member of Congress, their Republican member of Congress, and ask them literally just as seriously as can be, what did you get done this week? ? Please list five things and reply back by 8 p.m. on Friday. First off, how many of them are going to reply? So that was actually cause for firing tens of thousands of workers. And I think that was a good thing that DOGE did that under President Trump's leadership. But members of Congress who don't do anything besides whine, go on podcast and rage bait on X need to be called out because, Jenna, they are part of the problem. So in the meantime, in between time, the executive branch, DHS, ICE, President Trump, we can ramp up mass deportations. But a longer term issue is we actually have to codify into law a very simple principle. I don't even say illegal immigrants should not be on SNAP. If you are a visa holder, if you're on TPS, if you're here on refugee status, if you are an illegal, if you are a legal immigrant, if you are a green card resident, you know, if you're not an American citizen, you're not going to be on SNAP. And by the way, we need restitution. If you're an American, if you're non-citizen, I don't care if you're illegal or illegal or whatever, and you took SNAP benefits, we want restitution payments or you're getting deported too. So whatever you took from the government over the last 12 months, we want that money back. You have 14 days to pay it back or you are going to be deported. We're not playing these games anymore. And President Trump can use novel executive theories to be able to advance this cause. And by the way, the courts are going to sue him anyway, whether it's legal or not. The courts are going to sue him, or rather, well, effectively, the courts are going to sue him. It's going to be some plaintiff. But the courts, as you know, as we all know, have their thumb on the scale. So be it. Take it all the way to SCOTUS. We win 6-3. But let's just talk about our state. Jenna, you and I both live in Florida, okay? Byron Donalds is running for governor of Florida. Byron Donalds has been in Congress for nearly 5 years now. Why has he not introduced legislation to do exactly what we are talking about? This idea that non-citizens should be able to steal benefits, should steal taxpayer funds to fund their derelict way of life, that is unacceptable. That is not a Republican or Democrat. That is not a left or right talking point. That is right versus wrong, good versus evil. It is evil to steal from Floridians, to steal their wages and give it to unproductive illegal immigrants.
Preach. I completely agree with you. And this is where we have to, as voters and as citizens and as conservatives, hold even Republicans accountable by asking what are they doing to advance the conservative cause here and not just kind of, you know, go back on their heels and say, well, we don't want to look like we're being mean, you know, to the immigrant. And we're not going to give, you know, Chuck Schumer a talking point. He's going to say it anyway. They are going to do, the Democrats are going to do what they're going to do anyway. We have to completely ignore that and to advance policy. I love your plan. I think you should write that and send it to Stephen Miller and publish it widely. Send it to Byron Donalds. Ask him why he hasn't introduced legislation. He's still got a year, at least before the gubernatorial election here in Florida. What has he done, right? And that's the concern that I have with him running for governor. And I want to know what Republicans are going to do to address this problem, including the H-1B and all of those issues, as well as people who are on welfare that, as you said, James, are stealing from Americans, stealing from the worker, and that makes our taxes go up. I mean, that's what I was just talking about with Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins. Our property taxes in Florida are up so much because of the waste and fraud and abuse of the local municipalities and the local governments, and Governor DeSantis is trying to correct that. Where is that mirrored in Washington, where the executive and the Trump administration is trying to correct the waste, the fraud, and abuse of so many of these visa programs and so many of these SNAP programs? So we've got about a minute left, but your response.
You are spot on. You are spot on. We have to hold anyone and everyone accountable who is America last. Full stop. They're a Republican, even more. I mean, this idea that the 11th commandment, right? Perhaps even blasphemous from President Reagan to not criticize thy fellow Republican. Sorry, we're throwing that out the window. When Republicans are in bed with the globalist establishment elite, when Republicans support the H-1B program, when Republicans are doing nothing, Americans are being erased, are being replaced in our own country. America is our birthright. And any Republican in the so-called Congress who does not see and recognize what time it is, they need to resign. President Trump is the only one who's actually working in D.C. right now. I am grateful for him. Jenna, let's make America great again, but we got to do it with Americans, not with foreigners.
Absolutely. I'm with you, James. And you can follow James Fishback at J_Fishback and really appreciate your insights. Would love to have you on again talking about all of this and actually being America first instead of, you know, kind of America squidgy. That's what a lot of these people in Congress are doing. These so-called Republicans, they're unwilling to stand for America first policies. We've got to call them out on this. And if you're in New Jersey, New York, you're a conservative, go out and vote today. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.